This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stuff I Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio.
And we are back with our unfortunate mini-series that I have created again. Damn it, I knew I said I wouldn't do it and it ended up doing it. It came from one single idea about Southern living, and then it just spiraled as per usual. But anyway, we are back, and this is our ode to teen magazines and its history and impact. Because, y'all, it's pretty big. The impact is big. Maybe it's because, Annie, you and I were from the era of teen magazines. And I say this because we had a moment in between, before social media, y'all, oh my God, where we took a lot of advice and a lot of our education when it came to, like, sex and makeup and fashion and movies even, that came from big publications that are now collectibles, apparently. I should have known this. Why didn't I do this? Yeah. Old school magazines that have all the, like, centerfold outs. They're actually, some of them are worth the money. I came upon an article, which I don't really mention in here. Young women today, when I say young, like early 20s, who love these and try to collect them and talk about how much they wish it existed today in its format. And of course, we don't talk much about the zines, but that was a part of that scene as well. When they could not get the content that they wanted, so they created their own very niche content, and we've already talked about that. Go back to see that episode. But that is a part of that world as well, and why we were so heavily, the zines came around because we were so heavily influenced by magazines and its publications, and teen magazines are at the top. I didn't personally get too many magazines. They were expensive for me in that term. I think I would rather had books, but because I was nerdy. But I definitely have memories of sitting in my friends' bedrooms at sleepovers, which, by the way, I want to come back and talk about sleepovers and how that has not turned out so well. Anyway, but looking through different magazines, which had all these amazing quizzes, like, who is your perfect match? And so many others. What is your colors? As in fact, I went to 17 Magazine, which we are talking about. Pretty good deal in here because they were the first actual teen magazines, and we'll get into that. But I wanted to go see what their content looked like because, yes, they exist and they are thriving. Their medium has changed into being online only, I think. I could be wrong. Tell me if there's actual hard copies because there may be. Who knows? I said hard copy. Yeah, I did. but they still have quizzes on here, and they have some from 2018, including the ultimate Justin Bieber quiz, which I don't think has aged well. As of recent, they have a quiz on how to become an Instagram influencer, how to be famous. They even have one about Hannah Montana. Also, at this point in time has not aged well. And we'll come back to that later because not in this episode. That's a whole different episode. And it's like, rah. Anyway, but that was from 2018. And there's other quizzes, which I did pull one that if we have time, we'll do one at the end. Because we did these before where you and I, Annie, did some quizzes. And I did link one earlier. We're going to bypass that one. But like, I'm wondering like if we can pass the best friend quiz, which they have.
Oh, no.
I'm interested to see because I haven't even opened it. I was like trying to wait for a surprise. So if we have more time, we'll do it. If not, we'll put it as an extra like happy hour, maybe. Maybe on the next happy hour even. But they still have these quizzes. And y'all, when we say we love these quizzes, I don't know about you, but my age group loved these quizzes.
Yes. Yes. I feel because, you know, Samantha alluded to, this is what, the fourth, third?
Shut
episode
up. Don't judge me.
The magazine, not miniseries, definitely miniseries. So I've talked about this before. I didn't really have magazines either, and especially not in this realm, but I had friends that did, and I have friends that still do. Like when we go on a trip, like to the beach or something, we'll bring these magazines and we'll still take the quizzes, kind of jokingly, but like they were. When we were younger, it was like, oh, what is it going to say about who I'll end up with?
Or exactly.
Like it was a fun kind of community activity amongst us. So, because we were all answering and kind of giggling about it and like, oh, yeah, that's so you or whatever. But yeah,
I mean, there's the quizzes. Yeah, there's a quiz that says, what kind of flirt are you? And I was tempted to send that to you, but I didn't. But yeah, so obviously with all of that, the content has so much to and beyond the hair and love advice. There would be intriguing articles explaining how to get through a bad day. And I specifically remember one about a young girl talking about her experience and trauma from the years of abuse at the hands of her uncle. It was real personal. It was real in-depth. And the amount of information that teens and young adults were able to get from these publications are vast. All of it is ranging from the good, the bad, and the educational and not so educational. I will say I have heard stories and upon stories about girls learning about their periods or how to handle a period or what to use when they start their period, like trying to figure out what is normal and what is abnormal. Like magazines really taught us, and I say us as in, yeah, me too, a lot that we did not learn at schools, that we did not learn from our parents, much like podcasts now, hello, that gave us so much information that we were missing as teenagers. And as good as it is, there's also the bad, but it had a huge impact. Teen magazines, to me, was one of the forefront of developing young minds. In a way, that was actually smart. And very consumable. So we're going to jump into the historical context of teen magazines. And much like the beginning of women's magazines, teen magazines first started out as special forums or sections or columns within other magazines, such as the Subdeb, a page for girls, which was introduced in the Ladies' Home Journal in the 1920s. There were other specific publications, but not necessarily available for everyone. Such as magazines created by the Girl Scouts. They had like two or three publications that was specifically for Girl Scouts. And there were other magazines with sections for teens and women's magazines as well. They kind of had little pamphlets that could be taken out of those magazines. And the magazines started with general beauty and domestic advice and soon led to larger sections that would move to fashion trends for young girls, comics, advice columns. And it was in 1944 that 17 magazine debuted in the U.S. And by the way, according to one source, the idea of teenagers was also starting around at the same time, meaning the concept of teenagers as a demographic.
Right. So, yeah, just a quick explainer on this concept of teenagers. Many do point to the 1940s as the beginning of the use of the term teenagers with a hyphen in between. So teenagers. The word is thought to have been first in print in a 1941 issue of Popular Science Monthly, but was actually highlighted in a December 1944 edition of Life with photos by Nina Lean in an article titled Teenage Girls. They live in a wonderful world of their own. In it, they write, quote, "There is a time in the life of every American girl when the most important thing in the world is to be one of a crowd of other girls and to act and speak and dress exactly as they do. This is the teen age. Some 6 million U.S. teenage girls live in a world all their own, a lovely, gay, enthusiastic, funny, and blissful society almost untouched by the war. It is a world of sweaters and skirts and bobby socks and loafers, of hair worn long, of eyeglasses rims painted red with nail polish, of high school boys not yet gone to war. It is a world still devoted to parents who are pals, even if they use the telephone too much. It is a world of Virgil's Aeneid, second year French and plain geometry, of class plays, field hockey, moron jokes, and put on accents. It is a world of slumber parties and the hit parade, of peanut butter and popcorn and the endless collecting of menus and match covers and little stuffed animals."
I love that descriptor. Like, I'm not going to lie. I think it's such a great descriptor. Peanut butter and popcorn, was that a thing? I guess so. Mm-hmm. I guess this is like the late Depression era, like the in the middle of. So they wanted something much like Southern Living, something idyllic, and for some reason, teenagers really hit that nail on the head. And it's interesting to note, when we're talking about this idyllic and interesting, awkward life of teenagers, they're typically talking specifically about young girls, and whether or not they're representing their society appropriately, because apparently there was the usage of this term, teenagers, in the 1920s, which accompanied the idea of young rebellious girls who smoked. Specifically. Oh, oh no.
Oh, dear.
So there is an interesting context with that.
Right. But yeah, with the birth of this new demographic, it's not surprising that publishers wanted to jump into the marketing towards young women / teenagers at the time. With 17 leading the way, the new market jumped straight in, going after these new age groups, specifically targeting girls in the 13 to 19 years age range. And with the fact that 17 still exists today, outrunning so many other publications, they are one of the longest and more successful teen magazines to date.
Yeah. And here's a bit of history with 17 magazine specifically. And we want to note that 17 wasn't necessarily the first magazine for young women, but the age range for the other magazines like Mademoiselle, which was published in 1935, was still geared toward young women in college and not to those who were considered teenagers. So pretty much in high school or middle school. But it is something to remember that similar strategies were used to pull in subscribers, and they realized the potential in consumership and capitalism with their teenage readers. So 17 Magazine, which is owned by Hearst Magazine, was originally suggested by editor Helen Valentine, who helped give young teen girls working women role models and gave helpful information to improve themselves personally, professionally, and socially. Before its first publication, they used a then-popular comic strip titled Tina, which was created by cartoonist Hilda Terry. So the comic ran from 1944 to 1963 and was a huge proponent on Sunday comic strip and was successful for the almost 20-year run. Apparently, she has done like actual TV shows, I think. So interesting fact right there. And when I say Tina, it's T-E-E-N-A. And yes, it is a play on the word teens. So with the help of the comic, the company was able to promote the magazine to advertisers and was able to secure them for their publication. And they made sure to take the time to try to understand their audiences by surveying teen girls from 1945 to 1946 and were able to use that information to make the magazine more successful for the audience and the advertisers.
In an article written for SammysWorld.com, they write, 17 was successful from the onset because it tapped into teenage anxieties and vulnerabilities while delivering its ideal reader to massive advertising companies. Through 17, Helen Valentine, its founder, hoped to create a magazine that would, quote, treat teenage girls seriously and respect their emotional and intellectual needs in addition to helping them choose their first lipstick. In its first issue, 17 vowed to help teenagers make sense of their identity. But before doing so, they introduced businessmen and advertisers to American teenage girl consumers. As Missoni writes, 17 also promoted the teen girl through its education of adults, particularly those in the advertising and retail industries. Because the magazine could not succeed without the financial support of advertisers, selling businesses on the idea of the teen girl as a consumer was among the first tasks at hand. by appealing to funders prior to teenage audiences, 17 positioned itself to meet the needs of the market's movers and shakers before establishing a relationship with its readers. The foundation of the magazine's success was built with full understanding of the growing needs of businesses to sell products, coupled with the growing emotional needs of teenage girls. 17 methodically and expertly knew how to harness and hook the powerful consumers, businessmen and teenage girls alike, among its readership.
Right. And I feel like this has been a secret that people keep forgetting and relearning. You know what
I know. It's like every time we do an episode about fangirls and suddenly people are like, wow.
Oh, yeah.
They support stuff and make money.
Oh, they buy things. I forgot.
Yes.
Because this was in the 1940s. And you know, even before then, because we've had this conversation when it comes to women in the magazines and purchasing power and who has it, it's been women. It's been young girls. So it's kind of like we have to relearn, reinvent the wheel here. So the launch of the magazine was seen as a success. And in its inaugural edition, they did what many of other publications didn't, which is introduce themselves and their intent in giving teen girls ownership of this magazine. So allowing for feelings of being seen and understood and given some credit to wanting to be a part of something. Teen girls were excited to see something that was tailored for them. That Sammy's World article writes, it takes reading only a few pages of the original September 1944 issue of 17 to see that unlike Vogue or Harper's Bazaar, the magazine unabashedly tries to forge emotional connections to teenage girls and teenage girls exclusively.
And it continues, in the accompanying letter of the first issue entitled 17 Says Hello, Valentine makes her intent with 17 very clear to readers. Quote, 17 is your magazine, High School Girls of America, all yours. It is interested only in you and in everything that concerns, excites, annoys, pleases, or perplexes you. Valentine notes that while 17 was interested in how you dress, how you feel, and how you look, what you do, and what you think, all of which became different categories in 17's table of contents, they were most interested in what you are. Are you tense and ill at ease or comfortable and relaxed? Have you a chip on your shoulder or a smile on your lips? Are you interested only in yourself and your closest family and friends? Or do you care what happens to people you'll never see? You're going to have to run this show, so the sooner you start thinking about it, the better. In a world that is changing as quickly and profoundly as ours is, we hope to provide a clearinghouse for your ideas.
So that is a brilliant scheme, especially in the 1940s when women in general weren't being listened to, but to have teenage girls who were even less important. Wow. This was screaming, come here, you're welcome, buy things from us, you can trust us.
Right.
And it's genius.
And also, just a reminder, this was before the internet. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people, sometimes we forget that, but at the time, this was like, oh, wow. Other people like me. It was kind of like an early version of that connection we get through the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I think it's important that we have focused a bit on specific magazines in each of our episodes because they were kind of the marker of the beginning of something huge, obviously. And they were able to establish a concrete base for this. But it was interesting because in that first article, they also had a picture, and which if you ever get a chance to look it up, you should. And I believe it depicts two young girls with an older woman. And it says happy birthday 17. And they did this on purpose again to show you, to actually give you a legit picture of what this looks like with her welcoming you into their family. So it's very, very, very fascinating. Valentine was able to show advertisers the fresh new market of teens and how they were ready for something that was created just for them. So 17 was only the beginning. Many others soon followed, but wasn't until really the 50s that the magazines boomed. Get it? Boomed. Boomers. You get, yep.
Pretty good.
And though magazines like 17 were successful with appealing to the young ladies and teenagers in their search for fashion and society, other magazines soon appeared, which were the gossip and celebrity magazines, which hit the scenes quickly after.
Here's a quote from encyclopedia.com. In the 1950s, gossip magazines such as Teen Parade and Hepcats saw working class readers, while 17 emphasized fashion, dating, and early marriage. And for some more details about the birth of these magazines, here's what Mental Floss wrote about it in their article titled A Dreamy History of Teen Idol Magazines, Just for You. Quote, the idea of pandering to fans of clean-cut performers with breathless magazine prose can be traced back to Elvis Presley. In the late 1950s, magazines like 16 went from printing song lyrics to relaying details of what it might be like to date the King, crooner Pat Boone, or actor Tab Hunter. When the Beatles arrived stateside in 1964, the ensuing pandemonium flowed into what was quickly becoming a subgenre of publishing, teen idol worship.
Right. And they continue. Charles Laufer took notice. A journalism and English teacher at Beverly Hills High School, Laufer thought a magazine devoted to teen interest would be a success. He launched Coaster, a regional publication for Long Beach locals in the 1950s. It didn't succeed until he realized his mistake. Boys don't want to sit down and read about celebrity lifestyles. Girls do. Laufer renamed the magazine Teen and watched it grow into a hit before leaving to start Tiger Beat in 1965. His timing was fortuitous. The Monkees were just beginning to explode in popularity, and Tiger Beat saw its circulation rise when it profiled the fun-loving group. Laufer sold Monkees fan club memberships, posters, and books before he sold Tiger Beat itself to the Harlequin Romance House in 1978 for $12 million. Yeah, I am an old soul, and I loved old movies. I probably watched way too many Elvis movies. This was before I was learned about him and realized how awful he was. Sorry to those who love Elvis. As well as I watched all of like the beach movies. I don't know. Frankie and Annette, loved them. And this was like right after their Mouseketeer years. I don't know what's with me. I apparently really loved old school American culture during those times, which is hilarious because I would have never been welcomed in that era of time. But I loved those. And my mother, when I would ask her about the things that she loved, because she thought it was fascinating that I loved all these old movies and that I really got into them, because she would give me a collection of old musicals, which still, I'm like, looking back, I'm like, these are really problematic movies, but I loved them. What's wrong with me? Anyway, but one of her favorites was The Monkees. And for some reason, when she talked about them, I watched the shows which had The Monkees because they had their own show. And it was actually pretty good. I liked it a lot as a kid. And that's what I thought as a kid. And she talked about how much she loved them. And she loved Donny Osmond, who didn't, I guess, during that time. And then, like, these magazines did pop into my head. I remembered them, though I never owned them. I never saw them. I don't think my parents owned them. I don't know why, but I knew these magazines because it was so big.
Right.
But with that, and yes, again, my mother was a part of this fandom. A new era of fandom began. And Annie, I think it's about time that you reveal to all of us your Ryan Gosling story.
Oh, dear. Well, so I had a huge crush on Ryan Gosling when I was 9. He was in the show Young Hercules. I would record it every day at 3:30. And then I would rewatch it. I still have all the VHS tapes because I didn't know what to do with them. But although I recently got my hands on the DVD and I'm on disc 3, and I'm like, I can see why Young Me liked this so much.
Which I just saw Xena being advertised on a streaming network. I think Amazon.
I think so. I'm confused because someone told me that Young Hercules is on Hulu and it definitely isn't. But I believe Xena definitely had more power than Young Hercules did. They were in the same universe, but it was 50 episodes. I loved it. I had a huge crush on him. So I had this lunchbox that said Reese on it because it was like a Reese candy box. And I put all of my magazine clippings from Ryan Gosling in this box. And this is the most embarrassing part. I had one of those talkback things. It's like what they'd had in Home Alone 2, but it was way cheaper. Like it could only record like 10 seconds.
Okay. Yeah.
And it was like the size of my hand. But I recorded him. There's a scene early on in this first season that he says, "I love you" to his mother. And I recorded it and I would play it at night. But the worst part is that I would go to said sleepover. Everyone knew I loved Ryan Gosling. Like it was, everyone knew it. I just would talk about it all the time. So I would go to sleepovers and I'd bring this box with me and I would play it before I went to bed around other people, Samantha. And I would have my magazine clippings. I'd be like, look at this, read this.
I'm wondering, like, outside of the friends you talked to today, because you do talk to several of your school friends, I wonder what those other girls or other people, if they have this memory of you.
There is one party in particular I'm like, I'm sure they remember that.
But, you know, I don't think it's, that just shows a whole different level of, like, dedication. And if they weren't making fun of you then, they agreed with you and or they were doing something similar or this was absolutely, normal to them.
One night she was a slightly more popular girl than me. That sounds so mean. She was more popular than me. I was shocked I got invited to her party. And her grandmother was there who knitted me this nice blanket that I still have. Somehow it came up and we were sitting in a group and it felt like an intervention. And they're like, what is with this Ryan Gosling box and this whole thing? And I remember just like telling them all of these thoughts and I had my box.
You know, you really haven't changed that much. It's just now about The Last of Us, Star Wars, and some video games.
If I show up,
to be honest,
the Star Wars box at your place. Oh, no.
I mean, you've come in with your robots, your droids. You come in all dressed in gear. Like, you've been ready. I don't think you... Like, you are you. And this is just about right for your personality. And I love it.
Well, I'm glad. I appreciate that. But it was definitely like, I would buy magazines if I knew he was in.
Right. And I don't think you're the only one.
No, I think a lot of us did. I think, like... Because again, they were expensive. Like to get a subscription was expensive, but I could afford like one issue of one thing. And then I would cut it out and I would put it in my box.
And I think up until recently, like I remember seeing books that are dedicated, or books, magazines that are dedicated specifically to fandoms, that to yeah. one fandom. I bought you, and you bought yourself, and several other people bought you the Star Wars edition of Time. Was it Time?
Time There's a magazine. Bunch that came out at the same time, but
yeah, because of the anniversary. And then I saw when One Directions were big, they had their mm-hmm. own magazines. NSYNC, we kind of mentioned them in later, like had their own magazines, and they had very detailed magazines, including their, you know, the age old question: what is your ideal date? What is your ideal girl? All these things, which Liz yeah. Bass lied all the way through that thing.
Yeah,
poor dude. He did his best. He did what he had to do. But yeah, like people love these types of magazines, and they're good. They're successful.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. It's funny because when I recently bought a Star Wars magazine, and it was kind of embarrassing because I have like my Star Wars shopping bag, and I was wearing like my Star Wars shirt, and then I bought my Star Wars magazine. It's like, well, sorry. I am who I am. yes. So going back to the main timeline, now that I've shared the story of my Ryan Gosling shrine.
Thank you.
Yes. There were so many of these magazines starting to saturate the market, the business was still successful. Here's a quote from Remind magazine from Eric Kohanek's article. Quote, "Teen magazines have fed youthful fan frenzy for decades. Teen magazines have always capitalized on frenetic fan frenzy. And their business models have always basically been the same. Focus on what has long been a coveted demographic. Young and primarily female consumers unafraid to swoon over their favorite music and TV idols, and eager to feast on celebrity gossip and pinup photos. With such titles as Teen World, Flip, Fave, and more, teen zines line the shelves of bookstores and newsstands everywhere, attracting readers with colorful covers and attention-grabbing headlines like Monkey Dating Secrets, Donnie's First Date, or even Beatles' Secret Wild Pics. The publications always zoomed in on teen idols. TV and music stars like Elvis Presley, The Beatles, Annette Funicello, Sandra Dee, Bobby Darin, The Monkees, Donny Osmond, David Cassidy, Bobby Sherman, the list goes on and on. And as far as graphic design went, vivid colors were usually the order of the day. A wide variety of typefaces would litter virtually every inch of the magazine covers, and close-cropped headshots mounted on cartoon bodies were a cheesy but common gimmick."
Yeah, I mean, all the things that I can remember, they have like the bubble lettering.
Yeah.
That infamous bubble lettering. And you knew what it was.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. And of course, you got different magazines based on quality. Some of them were paper, but some of them were like glossy. So
yeah.
You had to pay for the glossy version, people. Right. I guess you still do, technically. So with all these magazines finding success, there was fierce competition, and getting the right celebrity on the cover of the magazines and the level of stardom could be measured to who was being featured. Stories of celebrities hanging around the offices at the beginning of their career to celebrities trying to remain far away from the covers of the teeny bopper publications to show that they were, quote, serious actors, were a part of this industry.
However, with its popularity really hitting in the 70s, the overall business eventually did die down. Here's another quote from the Mental Floss article. "At its peak in the 1970s, Tiger Beat and its sister publications reached roughly 2 million readers a month. Others got by on as little as 135,000 paid copies sold. The 1990s diversified with titles like Teen People and Sassy, publications that brought a stronger editorial voice to readers and eased up on the kind of copy that didn't exactly enable feminism. Sail away with Ralph Macchio in the 1990s. The popularity of the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC helped keep Tiger Beat and the others afloat, but not for long. The internet and social media excised the middleman, allowing stars to control their exposure and deliver calculated glimpses into their lives without Teen Beat interfering."
Right. But even with its popularity waning, during its heyday, they thrived. In the 70s, they were popular, and soon the industry realized its success and started to widen the grounds. In the 60s and 70s, publishers started releasing teen magazines for people of color, specifically the Black community. Some of them included Right On, Black Beat, and Word Up. Here's a bit about the growth and history of Black teen magazines from the University of Missouri. Black magazines for children and teenagers started out with a focus on Black heritage, arising out of the politically charged atmosphere of the 1960s and 70s. At issue was the need for magazines that praised rather than condemning Black history and that offered children role models in the Black community. Like the discourse around Black hair, these magazines often gradually drifted away from their original purpose and gained broader audiences, particularly if and when they focused on products of Black culture, like music or art, rather than specific Black individuals. Included in the gallery are magazines from 1973 to 1991, starting with the educational Ebony Junior and continuing to more teen-centric magazines that did not exclusively target a Black audience. Perhaps telling none of the magazines included in this gallery had particularly long run times.
Magazine for boys were also published and still are, but the numbers are not too high. In fact, trying to find specific publications and articles about the history of that is not really readily available. Publications like Dirt, which was released in 1991 with the emphasis on sports, music, movies, and others, but it did not last too long.
There are a few, and we found a few, but they didn't. People don't talk about it. Essentially, one of the first things that I did read when small publications were coming out or specific columns were coming out, they would just imply that the regular Life magazine were for boys or the regular National Geographics were for boys. So it was interesting and very, very telling about what they saw. And much like what we talked about with Laufer, boys didn't pay like girls will. So there's that. The overall success of these magazines were huge, and with that comes controversies. Studies have come out showing that overall effects of these magazines for young girls and women. Many argued that these types of content was not only damaging to the self-esteem of young developing girls and teens, but also very dangerous for them, including being overly sexualized from a young age or being told to be sexual. We have also ran into many articles condemning all of these magazines. Saw one specifically about 17 recently, like a couple of years ago, and how damaging it was, and she would never allow for her teenage girls to look at them, which is fine. Again, I get that. And a lot of conversations about how they felt like those magazines ruined them as adults now. And of course, many have accused them of teaching unhealthy gender stereotypes and causing damage for many generations. And like many magazines and similar publications, they often focus on stereotypical ideas when it comes to women and young girls, and beyond that, criticizing them into buying their way into perfection. And unfortunately, many teen magazines followed suit.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In a research article within the published book titled Body Image, they write specifically about the effects of such magazines, titled Grooming 10-Year-Olds' Gender Stereotypes, a content analysis of preteen and teen girl magazines. And here's a quote. Mainstream magazines, defined as those published by major media conglomerates and containing commercial advertising, primarily feature women in stereotypically feminine roles or as sexual objects. Content analyses have found that these magazines depict predominantly young Caucasian women with increasingly thin body types, frequently displayed partially clothed and in sexual or submissive positions. Similar findings have been found in mainstream magazines aimed at teenage viewers. Content analyses of these magazines, e.g. 17, demonstrate that general appearance and body problems are primary topics. For example, a study of 17 magazine found that girls' bodies are depicted and described as problems that require maintenance to fix. Acne, hair, odor, and hip/thigh fat are targeted as undesirable and unattractive features that require extensive body maintenance routines to eliminate. This emphasis on appearance has been a dominant focus in 17 since at least the early 1960s, constituting approximately half of the magazine's content in 1961, 1972, and 1985. In addition, the presence of dieting and exercise information has significantly increased in mainstream teen girl magazines over the last 50 years, suggesting that these magazines increasingly focus on solutions to appearance-based problems.
Right. Of course, with this in mind, we have to acknowledge the way young people and girls specifically internalize these types of ideas. Here's another quote from that research article. Several studies have found that adolescent girls internalize media body ideals to a greater degree and higher rates of body dissatisfaction compared to adolescent boys. Experimental research has also shown that exposure to magazine images of models predicts lower body satisfaction and self-esteem in adolescent girls. Even girls as young as five show these patterns. These findings suggest that girls, unlike boys, may begin to internalize cultural beauty standards portrayed in media at a young age and continue to do so throughout development. So with the amount of media content young people consume, it isn't surprising to see how big of an effect these kind of images can leave. And yeah, again, we are examples of this. We came from an era of seeing tiny, tiny, tiny women and being told if we're not this, then we're not worth their time.
Yeah. And then being sold those products to make yourself look that way when probably you never will. A lot of it's genetics. And it's also expensive. So.
And for some reason, we believe the people who would tout them. I just remember the Suzanne Summers already, who was tiny, 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 tiny. And she, because of her body image, was able to sell Thigh Masters like nobody's business. Mm-hmm. And I believed it. I really wanted one.
Yeah.
Thank God I didn't have the money. But I really did want one.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so... But as a new era of publication arose, so did the quality of content in teen magazines, and many more in-depth articles were starting to be published. To be honest, 17 started in an era when young girls started to dream beyond family and home. Valentine's original image as the working woman's role model was beyond the gender norm at the time. Sure, it was clouded with capitalism and money-making schemes, but it was an idea that young girls wanted more and would develop to be the decision makers when it comes to consumership, within the home, and the bigger fashion industry.
This is making me think of a joke that people will say about Playboy, of like they read it for the articles. so we You know, we didn't even talk about that in the boys'
We have not talked about Playboy. Damn you, Annie. That's yours. I'm not doing that.
Come on. All right. As the teen celeb magazines grew in popularity, other teen magazines came out as well. In 1988, we had the first counter magazine to Seventeen, Sassy Magazine. Here's a quote from NPR. Sassy was the antithesis of the homecoming queen, please your boyfriend culture. It published articles about suicide and STDs while Seventeen was still teaching girls how to get a boy to notice you.
Right. Though the magazine didn't last too long, it did stop publishing in like 1994 through 1996. There were two different dates, so there it is. The impact was long-lasting. The founder, Sandra Yates, was an Australian feminist who sought to bring meaningful conversation to teen magazines. That took a bit of a dark look at the culture at the time. The magazine was controversial enough for groups like Women Aglow, which was an evangelical group, to actually call for a boycott. And then there's Jane Pratt, who was the founding editor of Sassy. And she would go on to other publications with similar feels, including Jane Magazine, which I know. The magazine at the time really wanted to change the look of teen girls magazines. Here's a quote from a Washington Post article written by Julia Carpenter, which says, devoted readers remember Sassy, Jane and other titles that published reporting on politics, feminism, identity, and more alongside fashion spreads through the 1990s and early 2000s. And in the late 1990s, we have seen more publications talking about the deeper issues at hand, and even daring to call themselves feminist and asking their teen readers, are they feminists?
Here's a quote from the same Washington Post article. Editor and writer Brandon Hawley led the charge at Elle Girl when Hearst was first dipping its toes into the teen mag business in 2001. She recalls the reaction when Elle Girl ran a cover story titled, The F Word, Are You a Feminist? People were like, oh, feminism, she says, adding that she finds it weird that 17 years later, we're still having this conversation. From those early days of F-word covers, Hawley saw the teen magazine landscape evolve and push the boundaries of what was considered acceptable for teen readers. At Jane, where she worked from 2005 to 2007, she published reports on gay conversion therapy, essays on work and money, and even a multi-page spread of reader-submitted nudes dubbed the Jane Guide to Breast.
Yeah. Yes. And we still have to ask that question.
Yeah.
That's really annoying because I think this article is like from like 2017. Anyway, and with the magazines coming out strong, many others have followed this down the same path.
Yeah. And I believe there's been a past episode about Teen Vogue in particular when it comes to this. But yeah, it wasn't too long ago that we saw changes within Teen Vogue countering conservative narratives and defending their rights to our autonomy. Here's a quote from that same Washington Post article. In December, an online opinion piece headlined Donald Trump is Gaslighting America appeared in Teen Vogue magazine. Within hours, the harsh indictment of the then president-elect exploded on the internet. Comment sections erupted in debate, and aggravators trolled the writer, Teen Vogue weekend editor Lauren Duca, on Twitter. But it wasn't just the subject of the article that caused the uproar. It was the nature of the publication that it ran in. What was a political piece doing in a teen magazine?
Right. And many magazines have understood the importance of teaching young girls and women about topics like these. Even in 1998, they began to openly talk about the issues at hand. Here's a quote. In 1998, when she was at Cosmo Girl, Atossa Rubinstein had launched a political series called Cosmo 2024, named for the year when one of the magazine's oldest reader could theoretically be elected the first female president, which is this year. I kind of want to go see if we have a comeback to that. Obviously, no, but yeah, I'm just saying. Right. Rubinstein and feature 17 editor and Choquette interviewed leaders like Madeleine Albright, Barbara Walters, and Donald Trump about their paths to professional success. The final package, a collection of advice and essays on success and career building, fit the promise in Cosmo Girl's tagline, born to lead. And then Rubinstein would go on to lead major similar changes to 17 magazine, again, the original teen magazine.
The growth of this type of change in these magazines has impacted the industry as a whole. Here's a quote to end with about the radical but not so radical changes. So when Holly thinks about her time at Teen Magazine and their history, from Elle Girl to Jane and now to Teen Vogue, she thinks about her 8-year-old son's friend Fiona. Fiona loves lip gloss, but she can also ride backward on a surfboard. At the Women's March on Washington in January 2017, she held her own protest sign. Girls like Fiona don't need just any magazine, Holly says. They need a guide to womanhood that doesn't preach or condescend, but instead educates and uplifts. And most important, reflects the girls who are reading it. Teen magazines today are introducing girls to feminism that isn't bra-burning, which is also cool, she says, but you can be feminine and a feminist.
Right. And I think that's really important for looking at publications. And yes, we're looking at more online publications more than anything. But yes, there are obvious magazines still out and about, collectibles even if you want, and able to get a hold of. But we know that today, that kind of written medium is getting less and less and less. And a lot of magazines have folded throughout the years. We've seen major histories. Things that I thought were still existing does not exist. So, like, that's one of the things I've discovered in this research. Magazines like Teen Vogue obviously have played a really important role, especially in the last two elections, as well as 17, as well as Jane Magazine. We haven't talked about Miss Magazine at all. We haven't talked about Magazine, which I realize that we're gonna have to come back to, but I'm not gonna promise when. Anyway, but all of those things are important. But teen magazines have really, really changed an atmosphere and the environment in general when it comes to young girls and who we've become. And it may be things like the 1998 article, which talks about encouraging girls to think about being the first female president. Like, all of these things are pretty significant in our culture, and it shows today why we need to pay attention to the historical context and what has changed throughout the years.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, listeners, if you have any memories with teen magazines, any thoughts, if you had a shrine of your own, perhaps, or any collectible issues, let us know. You can email us at stephaniamomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter at Momstuff Podcast, or on TikTok and Instagram at Stuff One Never Told You. We have a Tee Public store, and we have a book you can get wherever you get your books. Thanks, as always, to our super producer, Christina, our executive producer, Maya, and our contributor, Joey.
Thank you.
And thanks to you for listening. Stuff I Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite show. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.